This is CliffCentral.com. Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law. Like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Alongside me today, Lionel Makokotlelo. Welcome, Lions.
Dumela Germategwane to all people who speak Venda, since our president is Venda, so we might as well learn this.
Absolutely,
language.
Yeah. I'm going to say goodbye to San Bodani.
You better jump ship right now.
Cool, Lions. Today we're talking about debt, the debt crisis, and most South Africans have returned from their summer vacation now, as we all know, to face racked up debts and credit cards that are maxed out, and now the household accounts are piling up.
I'm worried, Gary.
I know you went on holiday, so I'm not quite sure where you are on this one.
But this doesn't attach to you, because you've got old money. You have got nothing.
It's old money because I'm old, lads.
No. Generational wealth. That's
anyway,
what we're talking about.
Lads, it's not about me. It's about people that have to pay their school fees and their cars and their bond payments. It's worry, worry, worry. Some South Africans have sadly reached rock bottom. You know who that is?
DJ.
It's Eminem, Rock Bottom.
Yeah, but you're like the DJ here. You know, you come up with the songs all the time. You know what? You're dope, dude.
It kind of gives it a bit of life.
You're dope. That's all I can say. You're dope, dude.
Cool, lads. So today's about those over-indebted and flat broke rock bottom South Africans who need help, and they need it real fast.
Yeah.
Our guest today is a man who knows just how South Africans are struggling to manage their finances. In fact, our guest is the recipient of an award for his major contribution to the debt review industry. He's a director of Octogen, and his name is Paul Slot. Welcome to you, Paul.
Good morning.
Good to have you in studio. Paul's one of the big names in this industry. Yeah.
It's an honor to have him here.
It really is, lads. May I mention, I think that you too, in your own capacity, are a debt counselor. Am I right, Lance?
Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's what I do now and then on different platforms, where we talk about the relationship of money and how to relate with money and what money means to people. So, yeah.
Okay, good.
It's something I'm very passionate about.
You'll play a big role today in this discussion.
Okay.
Let's give out our email address for those who want to write to us. It's law@cliffcentral.com. Lion, do you want to give the Twitter handle?
At Hertzlaw, H-E-R-T-Z-L-A-W. And Facebook page, you'll do the...
Yeah, it's the Laws of Life, the Facebook page. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg, because there's another Laws of Life somewhere else in the world. Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. And then also our collaborative partner today is Legal Talk South Africa, with 158,000 members, and they have posted a lot on this.
Yeah.
So we're going to pick up a whole lot of their questions. We're going to answer them in detail with Paul and yourself, and we'll give the public what they want.
The relationship, I must say, Gary, as always, it's constantly growing, and thanks to them and thanks to their podcasters who actually support this initiative, because without their support, this wouldn't have been possible. And kudos to everybody who actually is involved in this platform.
Yeah, I know that Legal Talk is sending out an email newsletter now as well, so they're encouraging their members, and they're going to put our podcast on their newsletter as well.
Oh,
our podcast
great.
Is pinned right now on their Facebook page, so we are getting a lot of listenership from there.
Oh, that's great.
Cool. Paul Slot, I've read, I think it was the other, or recently, that 16,000 South Africans are signing up per month for debt review. What's going on out there right now?
Yeah, about 16,000 is signing up every month, and they collectively pay about 900 million back per month to credit providers. So there's a lot of consumers who pay back a lot of money. But I think you need to take it one step outside of the 16,000 is that there's about 10 million people who are in arrears at this point in time, and they have some sort of cash flow problem. And you have to actually say what is going on there. And that's the basis of your question, to say, why are they in arrears? And the simple truth is that it starts with a position where my cash flow is negative. I have no enough. I don't have enough cash flow, and then you ask, why is that? What has happened to actually my cash flow? Where my cash flow is not in a position where I can pay everybody, including my food and whatever I need on a daily basis. And you have to take that back to the individual to say, how do they spend their money? I want to go one step back, which is, can we teach people to budget? My answer to that is no, we can't, because it's like going on diet. You do it for 3 weeks and then you actually give it up to say it's a bad job. So we can't teach people how to budget, but we can teach people how to spend. And we have a simple philosophy where we start always to say, let's take your take home pay, your net pay, and say, how should an ideal consumer look? And we always say that of your take-home pay, 35% should be spent on household items, 25% on risk services, your insurance, assurance, saving for retirement, and about 35% for debt repayments, monthly debt repayments. If you're more or less in line with that, you're healthy. You don't need anybody's help. The problem at the moment is in Africa is that consumers spend about 34% on household expenditure, 11-12% on risk services, and on average about 54-64% of the income on debt repayments. That's where the problem lies. Now I have to pay 64% of my income on debt. There's a financial crisis. I have to pay school fees or whatever the cash may be. I simply don't have that cash.
Yes.
And then what happens to the consumer at that point in time? The only answer they know is, let's borrow more. And they actually go to the credit providers, they apply for money, and 50% of the approval of the applications are approved. And now that 64% becomes 66% or 68%, next month they're in a worse position. That's where we are.
Yeah, so the answer is don't borrow more money when you're running into trouble. That's the worst answer, isn't it?
That's the worst possible thing that you can do. Now, normally a consumer is the first to know that they're in trouble, but the last one to take action. So if there's one message today, to say that, understand when you're in trouble and know what to do. And we'll spend a little bit of time on that today.
Okay, so Paul, is there anyone, I mean, your company, do you help people, forget about debt review for a moment, do you help people on how to analyze their financial position?
If you don't know your spending, you can't manage your spending. So we help people to analyze how they spend money. And we have national norms. For instance, just to give you an example, the average person spends about 6%, 5-6% on the entertainment. They spend about 20% on buying groceries. They're spending about 5% on paying a cell phone. And so if you analyze it and you say, but let's use the grocery example. If you spend more than 20% of your income on groceries, you're outside the norm. So if I tell you that you're spending more than the norm, let's say 25%, we say you can easily cut back by 5%. And that 5% you can actually use to start reducing your debt. So, and if you understand your spending patterns, you can start to manage it.
Lan, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, no, true. But just to add to that, and I think in most cases, it's also the lack of education in terms of people who grew up in a position where they were never actually taught how to relate with money and what money means to them. So as a result, when people start growing, they tend to start acquiring money, but they've got a bad relationship with it, which then tends to become a more of a vicious cycle, especially when they start having more responsibilities in terms of actually paying school fees and now starting having a real family. So those are just some of the things that I think people need to be conscious of, because without really having to understand or analyzing self-behavior, then one cannot actually identify the real problem in terms of how you relate or spend your money.
How many of the people that go under debt review are people that have lost jobs? I mean, I don't know whether you know these stats.
Yeah,
or people that get into genuine difficulty.
The debt review will only work if you have income. So the amount of people that apply for debt review without a job is minimal.
Yeah.
So the people under debt review have a job, and that's the last result. But let's go back to say that if If you take an average consumer, the 10 million that I mentioned earlier, about 70-80% can help themselves. They don't need to go under debt review, only if they take action.
Okay, so the people that have just come back from holiday that have accounts piling up, their credit cards are maxed out, they're in trouble, they're getting called by debt collectors, the sheriff could be knocking at their door. What should they do right now?
I think the first point is to establish where in the process am I. Is this my first unpaid or are there several unpaid? If it's my first unpaid, there's hope for you because you can actually start to understand your spending and you can do something about it. If you've received a Section 129 notice or a letter of demand, then you're almost down the cliff and you should actually knock on the door for help for debt review immediately because then you only have a very short space of time to be helped. So it's the first step is to understand where am I? Am I a first time unpayer or have I done this a couple of times? If you've done it a couple of times, then you probably won't get debt because nobody will approve your debt. And at that point in time, it's the right time to actually say, I need professional help.
Do people neglect their financial position? Is it a case of I can't pay, so let me just leave it and hope for the best? What should people do about it?
I think the natural reaction of people is that is always a hope that next month will be better. So let me just borrow a little bit more. Next month will look after himself. So it's a failure to understand that I'm in trouble, and they will actually keep on borrowing money until the last credit provider has said no more.
Yes.
So we have to turn that around to say you as individual need to understand when enough is enough.
How do creditors deal with people who knock on their door apologetically and say, look, I'm in financial difficulty, I need time?
A lot of the credit providers will help you, especially if there's a home or a vehicle involved. They might help you to an extent. But I think the biggest mistake that consumers make is that instead of paying something or 80% or 90% of the installment, they pay nothing. Mm-hmm. So now the goodwill is not there. So if you actually up to date and you actually go to the credit provider and say, I'm in financial problems, can I actually renegotiate? They'll probably listen to you. If you haven't paid for 3 months, the likelihood of them accepting that negotiation has been reduced substantially.
Mm-hmm. People, I mean, when they come to you for debt review or debt counseling, it's the same thing, isn't it? The word debt counseling, debt review is exactly the same. Yeah. When they come to you for debt review, basically what you're doing is making arrangements with the creditors, which is something they could have done before they came to you. Is that what we're really saying?
Yeah, yeah, they could have done it, but they could maybe somebody different. The average person in South Africa is between 3 and 4 credit agreements. When they end up in debt review, they have on average about 10 to 13 credit agreements.
What kind of credit agreements are given? Where do you get 10 to 13 for the average person?
Personal loans is the top of the list. They go to every single Health bank.
Schitter in town, yeah.
Yeah, and clothing accounts and personal accounts, overdrafts, and to a less extent, bonds and vehicles and so on. So it's really cash flow. Because if you ask them, what have you done with the money? They'll say, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, in most cases.
Do you think South Africans are squandering their money more than they should? Or are they just overspending? What's going wrong?
It starts with overspending. It starts just actually spending. You can spend yourself in trouble, but you can also spend yourself out of trouble. The difference between the two is that the first one is irresponsible spending and the second one is responsible spending. And many consumers actually spend responsibly and they are okay. There are 14 million people who consumers who are okay across the board, different income levels. But there's 10 million people where they simply overspend themselves. Two things. They overspend in terms of debt and they don't cover all their risks. So if your 80% of vehicles, 60 to 80% of vehicles are not insured on the road. So if there's an accident or stolen or whatever, what do you have to do? You have to borrow.
Sure. There are roughly 24 million credit people in South Africa.
Yep, 25 million.
25 million. 10 million of whom are in trouble?
They have cash flow problems, but it's not to say that they need debt review. I think only Less than a third of them actually renew debt review. The rest can help themselves.
Is debt review, is that the last resort?
The last resort is always sequestration, but it's not available to the man in the street. It's too expensive. Yeah. And it's something that we don't want to recommend. But debt review is a methodology to get yourself on the feet. Because if you actually look at where we are 10 years later, many consumers actually started with debt review and they end up with a process where when they make all payments, they come out debt-free. Now, there's not a mechanism in the world that actually does that. And if we compare our debt review process to the world, the international expert says, but this is fantastic. This is actually working very well. But it's in the space to say that you, when you apply for debt review, you enter a process to actually repay your debt. It's not an instant solution.
The wording debt counseling, in my mind, presupposes that I'll go to someone, they're going to counsel me. They're not going to put me under some kind of constraint or restraint. But debt counseling, what is the meaning of debt counseling? What should happen?
So I think debt counseling has got two facets. The first one is pre-debt review, where you actually sit with somebody and actually say, but let's understand where you are today. Let's take stock and actually then try to provide advice to say, if you do the following, you can actually start to manage the process. Give you a quick example. If you have a small clothing account, and that's it's agreement number 10 or whatever the case may be, and you pay 100 rand extra a month, in 3 months, 4 months' time, you can close that account. And then you'll have 9. And if we can start to teach people that discipline of saving 100 rand or 200 rand in their cash flow, making that available elsewhere, then they can actually help themselves in the process. And that is pre-debt review, where you say, let's help the process. We have many consumers like that who actually help themselves, but they actually ask for help, number one, and they apply the help. And then they're in trouble, they need ongoing counselings like anything. You can't go away and say, I'm going to do this. They need encouragements in that road. And the last resort is where to say, I can't manage it on myself, or I have received a letter of demand. That's where you actually analyze the spending of the individual. You set up a living budget for that individual, and the balance is used to actually repay the debt.
The big corporates, I know many of them, have people that come there, maybe someone from your company goes, and they talk to the employees about how to manage their accounts and their debt. Surely, I mean, is this not helping to avoid 10 million people having impaired credit records?
There are many companies that actually do it. You have two classes of companies. Companies who actually say, I have a financial well-being. If you're in trouble, phone this number. And then somebody that actually is actually actively involved in the process. Now, the take-up of normally of the first category is less than 2-3% of people actually knock on doors. And that goes hand-in-hand with the consumers, because if you analyze consumers, 53% of them think more debt is fine and that will fix my problem. 42% actually do nothing. They just don't pay, but they change their cell phone number so you can't be reached, and only 5% take action. So that the recipe is not working.
No.
So the consumer is not going to take action. That's why I think we're starting to see a new movement where, just to give you an example, there are just about 1.2 million debit orders that actually are unpaid every month in this country. 1.2 million. So some of those service providers are saying, maybe I must help by consumers to get financially well, and then they actually put the consumer in contact with a service provider, and the spending is analyzed in terms of the process, and they improve their financial wellness. The credit provider or the service provider gains because the payment is carrying on, and the individual carries on or he benefits because he's getting more financially healthy. So a more proactive approach is probably what is required.
Gary, just to add to that, and I think in most cases, especially with some of the credit providers, they try to induce or seduce some of these over-indebted customers to actually get more debt once they actually start seeing an improvement, and which is then referred to as reckless lending, where then you actually try to really drag somebody back into debt, and as a result, their financial well-being is actually not being catered for. And we have actually started seeing some ruling insofar as the National Credit Regulator, as well as the Consumer Tribunal, starting to take a really serious stance against some of these credit providers. And I think it's most important that people who are actually over-indebted, they stick to the counselling insofar as actually being proactive on a monthly basis, just so that they get to be actually ushered into the whole process. Just like somebody who's actually addicted to alcohol, for example, you can't just leave them to be fendering for themselves. So they constantly need support, just so that at least they can become very stable and very grounded in terms of the decisions that they make. And this is where then our guest is actually very important in terms of actually assisting people.
Yeah, good point, Lance. Paul, if every effort has been made by a consumer, an individual, to try and sort out his debt and he can't, he arrives at your door or someone like yourself and he's has to go under debt review. Is that the way it is?
That's unfortunately the way to do it, that's going to happen irrespective. But there's some positive points in terms of that, is that if you do nothing, legal action is the only opportunity for the credit providers. If you apply for debt review, you are protected. As long as you make a payment, nobody can touch you. It can actually repay the debt. So even if I say you're going to pay the debt over 60 months, if you get an increase in salary, you can actually pay it faster and you benefit in terms of the process. So the consumer is protected and they can actually manage the process much, much better.
What does the consumer want when he goes under debt review? He wants to protect his house, he wants to protect his cars. The rest, he could get sued. I don't know whether the major retailers are suing them. They generally don't. So they're listing people on the credit bureaus. Yeah. What is he trying to gain here?
If you look at the people under debt review, about 12% have a house. So housing is not the top,
big consideration.
Yeah. Although people with a house, even if it's fully bonded, want to protect the house.
Yeah.
And sometimes a house that's fully bonded is not an asset; it's a liability. Mm. But that's by the side. Mm. And secondly, they have to protect their vehicle, because without the vehicle, they can't get to work. So they need a vehicle to actually travel. And the rest is how to actually repay. Some of the credit providers might not take immediate legal action, but that credit report is tainted, so you can't borrow more. So a lot of people say either protect my car or my house, or how do I get my credit report clear? So yeah, how do I improve so that I can borrow somewhere in the
future?
Also,
he just can't take it anymore that he gets a call every day demanding money from him, which a debt review puts an end to. Is that correct?
Underestimate the financial stress that individual is under, because now he gets phone calls 10 times a day from credit providers. He can't do his work. He gets agitated. He fights with his colleagues, and he goes home and his wife wants money or whatever, or spouse wants money, and there's a fight at home. So the stress level is high. Mm. And what we normally find is that people in that situation just want that stress to go away.
The National Credit Act's been in what, for 10 years or
10
so?
10 years,
And debt review has been in for more or less 10 years.
Yep.
So debt review, everyone kind of knows what debt review is all about, and I'm sure our very smart listeners at Cliff Central kind of have an idea. Just very basically, once you're under debt review, it stops and it prevents a creditor from contacting you, demanding the money. Is that correct?
It stops the credit provider from taking legal action against you.
Yeah.
They can still phone you. I would say some of them do, but that you are protected. So the debt counsel will actually then do the budget for you and use that amount of money to actually repay it over a period of time. And that is approved in terms of the court order. And while you're maintaining that payment, you are protected in terms of that. And I think we've seen many consumers ending their debt review where they've actually paid their debt. And if you ask them, the two lessons that you've learned, to say, first of all, I didn't manage my spending. And secondly, is that I underestimated the less of stress or the reduction in stress from going under the debt review. I'll never default again. And there's some lovely stories around that. When one consumer repaid their debt, about 3 months later, she rocked up the door. She said, I just want to show you. And there was a little car standing outside. They said, there's my car. I bought a new car, but I just want to tell you, I'm never going to be over indebted again. That's my only debt that I have. I've learned my lesson. So the success of debt review, there's thousands of individuals who actually repay their debt. I think a very small percentage of them will end up in debt review again.
Do people actually comply with their court order, the debt review court order?
The payment rate, payment rate of people under debt review is about is more than 80%.
Really, that's fantastic.
More than 80%. Yeah.
So basically, creditors will get paid. They just got to hang around for much longer than they.
They get well from a credit provider point of view. Is that they sit still and the debt counsel does all the work and they get the money. So it doesn't cost them to actually collect the debt.
Yes.
So it's actually a very effective debt collecting mechanism, yeah. And that's why they love it. 900 million every month. So that proves the point.
From what is the downside from the individual's point of view? He can't incur any credit during that period. Is that right? The drawbacks of this. What are the drawbacks?
The drawbacks are simply is that you have to actually stick to your budget, number one. And number two is that there's no more debt while you're actually repaying the debt. Those are the drawbacks. But in some cases, no more debt is also a blessing because you can't be tempted because you have to actually stick to the program to actually repay the debt.
Is it stated on the credit bureau under your name that you are under debt review?
Yes, it is stated.
If it's not there and people say, you phone them and say, I'm under debt review, they could be bull-dusting you. If it's not on the listing, is it...
There's some cases where it's not yet on it, or slipped through, whatever the case may be. The consumer has to declare that he's under debt review. If the credit provider lends you money, it's reckless. And you can actually take action. And we have. The problem with that is sometimes where the consumer goes to unregistered credit providers, where that process continues. But I think that's also reducing.
Is it a scandal? Is it a shame to be under debt review?
I don't think so. Is it a scandal to go to the hospital if you're sick?
No,
you go to hospital and you actually say, I have a problem. If you're addicted to somebody, you go somewhere and you are cured. This is just one process to actually say, I'm going to help myself. So it's actually a plus in terms of that. Unfortunately, there are some credit providers who actually say to their staff, you may not go under debt review.
Yes.
And that's
really
a shame.
Yeah. But they cannot prevent them. It's unconstitutional.
No, the consumer's got that right.
Yeah, absolutely.
The consumer's got that right. And some employers, obviously, if you're under debt review and you're a financial advisor, that you might not be able to have that continue with that job. But generally speaking, I think you should actually be proud of yourself. I've taken the step to actually do something about my finances.
So anyone listening that's really in trouble at the moment, they can knock on the door of a debt counselor.
Yeah.
Go under debt review and not feel ashamed.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. I think it's a positive step, a sign of a positive attitude of a consumer to say, up to here, no further, I'm taking
charge. It is your business, Paul, which you're punting. Well, I don't mind, but you rightly feel that way. And I guess it's the way it is. It's not a shame. It's the way it is.
But you have to see it in the light to say that only 20 to 30% really need debt review. There's 70% of people who don't need debt review who can achieve exactly the same to say, I've taken charge.
Yeah.
I have, in my years, I've actually counseled a lot of people, and one of them was a reporter of a well-known brand. And we coached, and 3 years later, the reporter came to me and said, I have something to share with you. I've repaid my debt in 100%.
Lovely.
That person didn't go under debt review, but the person managed their debt down to a very low point.
The difference between debt review and sequestrasi, is that with sequestration, the debt's wiped off and that's it. You don't pay anymore. Whereas with debt review, you keep paying until it's paid.
Yeah.
So there is an honor to debt review, isn't it?
There's an honor to debt review, but I think the credit bureau has also come to the party. Because if you actually, the repayment amount is sufficient, they will actually reduce your interest rate to, it could go down to zero, or on a bond to repo plus two. So and they can actually cut the fees. So they're saying, as long as I get my capital back, I'm prepared to cut. Yes. Now, that in itself is also a sign from credit providers to say, I'm willing to help you.
On that very note, Paul, we have a number of people that have posted on Legal Talk about something that they're very, very unhappy about. And I'm going to read it to you. Irma Kotze, she says, please help. We've been under debt counseling since April 2014. We pay $8,640 a month. When we started, the amount we owed was $420,000. I now got an account yesterday that shows that we owe $312,000. Mm-hmm. She says they never negotiated the interest and so on. What can I do? At this rate, we'll never pay off the debt. Samantha as well, Samantha Victor, she said, I also had this 10 years ago. My debt was $44,000 and I paid $1,200 for 10 years, not skipping a payment. And when I removed this off my name last year, I sat with 72,000 debts. And so it goes on. Gerard said the same thing. Keith Williams says, under debt review, generally your amount should settle in a five-year period. The debt should not be going up. I think you need someone to have a second look at this. Mm. What's going on with this interest? How is this working?
Okay, let's analyze it. Yeah. You are in trouble and you have a cash flow problem. So I cannot afford the payment, the contractual payment. Mm. Now you go for debt review and you actually say to debt review, reduce my payment. So if you reduce a payment, let's say argument, you actually reduce it by 50%. It's never that much, but you reduce it, then obviously the term is going to increase, because unless the credit provider agrees to reduce the rate, and it's voluntary, it's not they don't have to do it, unless they agree to reduce the rate, by reducing the payment, you increase the period. So the answer to all those questions is that you started with a cash flow problem. You had a repayment profile, and the payment term would have been 10 years. But you, as consumer, should start paying more. That will reduce the period.
I think the misunderstanding here on the part of people that go under debt review is that the interest doesn't stop. The interest just keeps going. Is that right? And the creditor is not obliged to say, oh, debt review, right, I'm stopping the interest. He just runs
it. The clock still runs.
Mm. And that's what people don't know, and that's what they ought to be told. Yeah. It's a great show for that. Yeah. Alone. Lines, yeah. Yeah.
No, just to add to that, and I think most of the listeners, what they need to do is to be actually proactive in terms of actually seeking for information. I know that in most cases people never ask questions because they don't know, so how can you ask for something that you don't know? Mm-hmm. And most of these debt cancellers, they need to actually be transparent insofar as what are the consequences of actually reducing your repayment value, and more importantly, are they going to be renegotiating the better in terms of your interest rates? If not, ask them why not. Thirdly, they must also investigate whether there was any form of reckless lending. If then there was form of reckless lending, you stand a good chance to actually make it a point that you reduce any form of interest that is actually going to be charged against your debt. So those are just some of the things.
Okay, so let's take things practically. If someone comes to a debt counselor like yourself, Paul, or you, Lines, do you, when you make arrangements with the creditor to repay, do you say to them, will you please stop the interest, or is it, does it just speak for itself that they won't?
No, there's actually, it's much more simple, is that you actually do an analysis of the spending and you determine how much money they have to repay. Mm. That you feed into a system, a machine called a DCRS machine, and they will say, do you qualify for interest rate and fee reduction? If the amount of money that you actually repay is sufficient, it will actually solve it. The repayment at reduced rates is then accepted automatically in terms of the system. Mm. And that you then take to a court and actually to make it happen. If you have not enough money to actually fit those rule set, then you have to negotiate on an ongoing basis. So, but the first step always is that you say, let's qualify. And if you say, but I have 3,000 rand, you know it will solve at 3,050 rand, then you say, let's see if we can actually find another 50 rand to actually make this applicable to you.
My question to you is, if you when you approach the major retailers, I'm not going to mention them by name, and you say this person's going under debt review, do they, as a matter of course, agree to reduce the interest rate, or does the interest rate just continue to run as it did before?
There's an industry agreement, yes, signed by all the parties concerned, issued by the NCR as a guideline.
Yes.
We'd actually say first point of call is always the interest rate reduction in this order. So there's a set of rules that they apply to.
Okay. I mean, in fairness to the man, he's honest now. He wants to repay, but the interest is going to take over this debt. This is what's happening to all these people.
Yeah.
In the end, he's just paying forever. And you may not even see a reduction in the capital.
Sorry, Gary, to chip in, I think the other thing that really creates a frustrating layer in terms of the negotiation process, you'd find that in some cases, the very same customer who comes to us would actually be running away and creating a mickey situation in terms of actually creating a viable negotiations platform. And that on its own actually works to your disadvantage. If you find yourself in a position where you cannot honor your debts, rather go see a debt counselor or negotiate with your creditor to simply say, can you really renegotiate my terms of reference in terms of the original agreement that we signed? And that can actually work to your advantage. By the moment of changing your cell phones, running away, things will catch up to you. And today's technology, we can trace you very easily.
What happens if you have a difficult hard-to-cut credit provider who is not prepared to agree to the debt review repayment schedule?
So you take a matter to court and the court will approve the repayment. As long as it's a reasonable repayment plan, the court will approve it.
How do the creditors generally deal with this? I mean, the major retailers are used to this, but the average guy, does he say, well, bugger you, I'm not getting, I want my money?
The retailers and the clothing accounts and people like that, they're the easiest to actually cooperate because they want this back. They know it works. So they are the segment of the market where, as a debt counselor, I don't have problems.
Here's a question that I really like, and I'd like to thank Vanessa Chungu for raising this. She's from Ekurhuleni. She says, I'm asking for a friend lines, you know those? Mm-hmm. But anyway, she says, if you have been handed over to a debt collection agency, are you permitted to contact the company that handed you over to make a payment arrangement directly with them? Because the debt collection companies charge so much interest and fees. I'm not sure if you know the answer. Yeah. I do. What's your one?
The answer is yes, you can, but you have to make sure that the debt hasn't been sold. Because what credit buyers, some credit buyers do, they sell the debt to a debt collector, and then the debt collector collects for his own account. So the answer is yes, you can.
Good answer. Yeah. Great answer. Yeah. So if it's been sold, you're stuck with the lawyer or the debt collector. And if it hasn't been sold, my advice is please avoid the lawyer and go straight to
the
creditor.
Absolutely, always. Because it's always better to actually go straight to the credit provider. Yeah. But determine if the debt has been sold or not.
There were a few answers to this one. Someone said, unfortunately, you can't. It's too late. You should have made payment arrangements with them before you handed them over. They got that one wrong. The credit provider, unless the debt's been sold, is always someone that can be approached.
Some credit providers make it difficult because you actually go to the debt collection department. They know that they've actually given the debt to somebody else. But by law, you can actually pay directly into the credit provider's account.
Does a debt that someone sued on, there's already a summons out, can that be included in the debt review?
By agreement, yes. In terms of the Act, it has to be excluded. But because it's a good collection mechanism, many of the credit providers say, please include it.
Paul, a few more questions I want to just fire at you. Your fees, have they been increased in the last number of years? The debt
No, the fees hasn't been increased since 2010. Mm-hmm. So there's been no fee increase.
Has it knocked out a lot of guys?
Absolutely. Mm. About half of the debt counselors had left the industry, and no debt counselor actually makes money, I can tell you that.
True.
Debt counselors don't make money. They do it for the love of it.
How do you make money, Paul?
We
make money.
We make money from different areas. But if you actually say to Lionel here, open a debt review store and actually do debt review, are you going to make it financially? The answer is no. So the fees are not expensive.
Is it a secret what the fees are?
No, it's not a secret.
What do people pay for?
So the first fee is a negotiation fee or an upfront fee, which is normally 100% of the first payment up to a maximum of 6,000 rand.
Yes.
That's
the NCR's fees guidelines. Yeah. But the average fee in South Africa is about 3,000 rand.
Yeah.
So forget the 6,000. The average fee is about 3,000.
So do you, when you walk into a debt counselor, do you need 3,000 in your pocket?
No, nothing at all.
How much do you need to put down?
Nothing, not a cent.
So where does he get his first payment from?
He actually, the first payment goes to the debt counselor and not to the credit provider. That's the first payment. And then there's a monthly fee thereafter, and which could go up to 400 rand, but the average is about 120, 130 rand that you pay on a monthly basis. And then there's a legal fee to pay the lawyers to actually take the matter to court, but that comes out of the cash flow of the debt review. So it doesn't come out of the pocket of the consumer. And in a way, if the credit provider reduces interest rate, they pay for it.
I don't want to tread on dangerous turf, but I know the law, there's talk of the law being changed, and I know you've got strong views on this. You want to give us an idea of how they want to change the law, or you want to keep that for another show? Or?
I can give you a short answer to say that I think there's a need to actually look at the low-income earners, and they classify them as people earning less than 7,500 rand. So what can we do to help them to actually repay their debt? In many cases, they're over-indebted, and that is not going to go away. So there's what is proposed, a debt intervention plan, and they want to force people to actually, the consumers can apply, and then they go through a process to repay, and after 3 years, if they can't repay, it's written off. That's the proposal. I think it's a very complicated process that has been proposed at the moment. There's another session due in Parliament end of this month, and I think we'll see something much more practical come out of that. In principle, we support it, but I think make it simple. It's too complicated.
Just to actually go back to the fee structure, like when you do an application fee, there's going to be an application fee for example when you actually sit down with a debt counselor. That's about 50 rand, and then they do an analysis in terms of whether you are over indebted or not, and if they find that you are not over indebted, there'll be a rejection fee of 300 rand, and this has been when they can actually start helping you in terms of restructuring your finances and actually planning a financial monthly obligation basis line for you. So those are just some of the fee, but the amount of work that debt counselors do, it's too much compared to the amount of money that people pay, especially like the 50 rand and the 300 rand. You still need to make calls to all those creditors. You still need to go and make it a point that you consult with a lawyer. Or in some cases, a debt counselor can actually go and stand in the magistrate court. And the time that you take from the office and going to the magistrate court, it's a lot. That's very much a lot of money.
Just to emphasize that a little bit, debt review consists of about 202 steps. And it consumes, on average, 57 hours over a period of debt review. As a lawyer, you'll understand that 57 hours cost you a lot of money. There's no shortcuts. You have to actually manage the process step by step.
Paul, it's been a very interesting discussion. We've kept it on a high level. Is there anything you'd like to talk about before we bid you farewell that I may not have covered?
I think the important thing, and we started the show with that, is to actually say there's hope for the consumer. This consumer that has a cash flow problem today, to understand where they are, understanding how they can actually manage the process, and we encourage them to actually analyze that and say, where do I stand? Can I release some cash flow to actually make some debt repayments? If the answer, 70-80% of them should be able to do it. If they can't, ask for help.
Excellent. If people want to do this over the phone, can it be done, or do they have to come into the office?
No, 90% of it is done by phone or via the internet.
How long does the process take? People don't want to take time off work. They want to just
try. The initial analysis, if there's technology behind it, takes about 5 to 7 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So people, and then who stops the creditors from?
That's the initial process to just say, do you have a problem?
Okay.
The application process takes a little bit longer.
Okay.
In terms of filling in the forms and things like that.
In the meantime, if they're badgered by credit providers, do they say I'm going under debt review, or how do they handle
it? The only time that a credit provider will stop if they receive notification that the client has applied for debt review. That's the legally correct. So is that at the point when the consumer has applied for debt review, and debt review, we've actually said is actually a blessing. It's not a jail sentence.
Absolutely. I think so. Paul Slot of Octogen, you're one of the big boys in this business. Yeah. What got you involved in this quickly?
We actually were involved in assisting consumers prior to the to the National Credit Act, and it didn't work.
What's your background?
I was a banker for 25 years.
Okay.
So we understand money, and we wanted to give something back and started to do that. And then came along the National Credit Act, and it was chaotic in the beginning. And we helped to actually set some of the rules to actually make it a great industry.
Good. Many thanks. And Paul, we'll talk to you again. Thanks for this. To our listeners, I think you've learned a lot today, and it's been very interesting. Good. Thanks for listening.
It's a pleasure.
Cheers.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
This is CliffCentral.com.